We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Welcome to Stone Cold Stros, episode 18 of season 2. I'm Brandon Strange. I'm joined by Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Read Charlie's column weekly on sportsmap.com and follow him on X at Polillo. Read Josh's work daily on sportsmap.com and follow him on X at JoshJordan975. Astros take 2 of 3 from the Angels, but drop Sunday's game and pretty much a gut punch of a loss. Bad luck on defense combined with meltdown from the bullpen. Houston's gone 6-4 over their last 10 and are 6.5 back from first place Seattle, who've also gone 6-4 in their last 10. Rangers continue to scuffle, but keep the Astros at arm's length at 1.5 for the number 2 spot. The schedule remains light with more days off mixed in now. Altuve, Alvarez, Diaz, and even a little sprinkling of Jose Abreu are putting together better swings. Fromber pitched that complete game. I know that the Astros are thin. Guys are banged up now. The margin for error is basically nil at this point. Do you think the Astros have enough and are doing enough to take advantage of that floundering AL West?
Not yet. It's a little bit of a mini referendum on whether you're more half glass full or half glass empty by nature. It was Meatloaf who crooned, "Don't be sad. 2 out of 3 ain't bad." With due respect to the late, great Mr. Loaf, it's not always good. The Astros had a chance to sweep 3 from the Cardinals, a mediocre to worse team. Lost the finale. The Angels stink. The Astros take the first 2 games, have a 3-run lead in the finale, and their worst loss of the season. They've had a handful of terrible losses. Sunday's was the worst because the Angels are lousy. You lead the game 7-4 after a big sixth inning to take that lead. The Astros bullpen over the last 6 weeks overall has been excellent. The sore thumb exception sticking out, Ryan Pressly. Well, that sore thumb took another direct shot on Sunday. Josh Hader's been great over his last 11 outings. 1 earned run allowed. Well, Sunday, that came to an end. A closer every once in a while is going to give it up. Pressly, fairly relentlessly, has stunk. Net result, you know, they took 2 out of 3 in a weekend in which the Mariners lost 2 out of 3. The Rangers lost 2 out of 3. But the Mariners were playing a good Royals team. The Rangers were playing a middling Giants team. Right? And the Astros were playing a lousy Angels team. So it's no cause for, yay, they made up a game. Right? 6.5 out starting the week now. But Sunday's loss, the Astros 6th of this season. They're now 26-6 in games. They had the lead after 7 innings. 26-6, hey, that sounds really good. It stinks. When you're ahead after 7 innings, 26-6 does not cut it. The Astros last season, games they led after 7 innings, they finished 77-6. So maybe they're going to win 51 without losing one the rest of the way. They lead after 7. 2 years ago, 81-5, games they led after 7 innings, 26-6. That is bad. Pressly, the primary culprit. So that was a bad loss Sunday. It just doesn't have the feel that they're going to get on that extended jag where they win 17 out of 22, 22 out of 29. But sometimes those things just seem to materialize out of thin air. It's what the Astros need to happen during this stretch of schedule. The Giants, losing team. The Tigers, very mediocre team. Then they get a shot at the White Sox before 3 with the Orioles. So over these next nine games, the Astros could really use a 7 out of 9, 8 out of 9. It doesn't feel like they have that in them, but sometimes stuff happens.
At least they're consistent. This is how they've been losing games all year. Bullpen issues. Can't scratch across another run or two when you have plenty of opportunities with guys in scoring position. They've been doing that all season long. And you just eventually these are going to catch up with you. Losing games like this at the end of the season where you'll point to some of these losses and be like, man, that was the difference in the season right there. And speaking of Presley, I mean, it's been bad. In his last six appearances, he's given up runs in three of them. So that's not what you want from your eighth inning guy. So, but I don't know if there's an answer there. Maybe you have to stop using him in these high leverage situations, at least for a while, temporarily, until you build up a little more confidence in him. But, you know, Espada, he's going to go to that 7-8-9 that, you know, the whole season we've been talking about that. Oh, 7-8-9 is going to, you know, the game's going to be over when you hit the seventh inning. Man, when you score seven runs in a Justin Verlander start and you still lose, that's how this season has been going, unfortunately.
Well, and the alibiers for Presley, oh, the BABIP has been unsustainably bad, over 400, his XFIP is this. Presley has stunk this season, and Sunday was a crystallization of it, right? He gives up a leadoff double, then gives up a one-out double, nothing XFIP-y fluky about either of those. Then he wild pitches the tying run to third, although Yainer Diaz really didn't move very well on that. And he walks a 167 hitter to set up where a little check swing enables the tying run to score. Presley's been terrible this season, whether it's 35 years old and deterioration has kicked in, whether it's just not the same striding in the eighth inning as opposed to being the save guy in the ninth inning. But Presley's made 27 appearances, right? Updating something we touched upon, and not last week, the week before. 14 mil guarantees for next year with 50 appearances. Well, he's on pace failing an injury sometime soon to cruise past 50. That's $14 million bad dollars for the Astros to be on the hook for. It also depresses what already would be a depressed Presley trade market just because of the way he's pitched this season.
The Astros front office has taken a flogging this season for the performance and some decisions that have been made off the field. Do they at least get some credit for, I guess, identifying the writing on the wall with Presley and being proactive and going getting a hammer to put in that ninth inning? I know they haven't really been able to, because of other things going wrong on the team, really been able to capitalize on that. But I guess a little credit where it's due?
A mixed bag for me. I mean, Hader in a vacuum was a tremendous acquisition. He has not been year in, year out awesome. That's mythology. 5 years, $95 million. Was an overpay for a closer, just the nature of what they do. And Hader's 30 years old now, and the upside is he gives you 60, 65 innings. I do like the more aggressive way that Espada has used him, or maybe the way that Hader has agreed to be used now that he has all that guaranteed money. But the Hader contract was one guy in a reaction to previously having gone economical in the back end of their bullpen depth, right, with Stanek leaving and Neris leaving and Maton leaving, none of whom are having a real good lead. Right? Stanek giving one up for the Mariners over the weekend. And, you know, the Astros lost Sunday was terrible. The Mariners blew an 8-0 lead Friday night, right? All teams are going to have a couple, three, four of those games during the course of the season that, oh, it just got away. But the Astros ratio of them this season is unacceptable for a team that wants to get back to the playoffs for the eighth year in a row. But will there be budget ramifications going forward because you've committed $19 million per year for your closer? And that's why if Presley's contract vests, that's problematic a little bit for next season. Different level, and I'm not overly concerned yet with Justin Verlander, but he's had two bad outings in a row. And when you're 41 years of age, you know, father time's creeping up. Verlander start in, start out, just has not been close to a dominant starter. He's made 10 starts. He's been good to excellent in six of them. He's been poor in four of them, right? That's not ace-type stuff. And while the Mets would still be on the hook for half the money, Verlander gets to 140 innings. That's still $17.5 million on the books next year. McCullers is $17 million next year. Javier is $13 million next year. So how Crane and company are going to budget the Astros' payroll unless they're, this season spirals downward and they're actually going to back off and move to cut back salary and reposition for 2-3 years from now. A lot is up in the air with this ball club, not just for 2024.
Yeah, I'm with Charlie. Until we know how they use the money they do have, I'm not going to give him credit for the hater thing. We don't know what's going to happen with Bregman and Tucker and any other possible free agents in the offseason. So I'm going to kind of slow my roll and see how they spend the money that they do have ready to go add some quality players, hopefully.
The Rangers signed Kirby Yates and David Robertson combined for a little more than half the money the Astros are paying Hader this year, right? And the Astros owe Hader 4 more years at $19 million per. Kirby Yates has been better than Josh Hader this season.
But they've been getting more out of Seth Martinez and Taylor Scott than probably they could have anticipated. So you could make the assertion that those guys are picking up some of those innings that you might be paying substantially more for had you re-signed a guy like Maton or Stanek or Neris. But in the short term, just keeping it to this season, Presley has struggled, obviously. I don't know that the Astros have a whole lot of answers. I mean, Brian Abreu looked like he was trying to round into form, looked like he was getting back to where he was, but then now he's gone back and joined Presley into the crew of guys who are struggling to put clean innings together. I think Brian Abreu is probably a better choice than Presley, but Presley, I don't even know as it stands right now, you can trust in the seventh inning. What do you think they do? And if they decide to die on the Ryan Presley hill, the way they seem determined to die on the Jose Abreu hill, how much more is that going to burn goodwill with the fan base?
I think the fan base, it's about overall results. So I don't think a demotion of Presley, hey, you're abandoning a guy who never blew a save as the closer during this run. What have you done for me lately, world? If they think Taylor Scott is a better pitcher right now than Ryan Presley, which he is, if you think Seth Martinez is a better pitcher right now than Ryan Presley, which he is, well, then they should be starting to crack the door on some leverage opportunities at Presley's expense. It's just too many outings where he's been straight up poor.
I'm more worried about the starting rotation. To Charlie's point about Verlander, and Charlie wrote it in his column for Sports Map last week, him at 41 years old, yeah, read it, him at 41 years old, pitching on 4 days rest over and over again, you're seeing what that looks like right now. They got to get another starting pitcher, especially when they're playing games pretty much every single day. I think they got to get somebody in there to take some innings off of Verlander. And of course, you know, Arrighetti and Hunter Brown, these guys aren't players that are used to throwing, you know, just massive amounts of innings. They're young guys. So somebody, they got to find somebody in here to just take a little bit of the load off. I don't know if that's a trade or somebody they can promote. I understand the system is pretty thin, but you ask Dana Brown, he starts bringing up all these guys that you pretty much never heard of that are pitching great in the minors. So if that's actually the case, get them up here.
Near term, the schedule is helpful. They have an off day this Thursday, an off day the following Monday, but they have stretches still to come this season where they play 16 days in a row, 13 days in a row. So they're pushing it, right? Ronel Blanco inevitably was going to fall off. He was not going to pitch to a sub-2 earned run average all season. Last two starts, not good. Verlander, last two starts, now good. On the encouraging side, Framber Valdez pretty locked in, right? He had that one bad first inning and then settled down after that. But overall, 6 of his last 8 starts, Framber's been excellent. And they need him to A, pitch well, and B, consume a lot of innings in doing it. And that's why they let him go all 9, 106 pitches, the complete game in Anaheim over the weekend. But the 5 guys they have in their rotation as currently constituted, probably not going to cut it to wind up a playoff team. Luis Garcia, after the All-Star break, maybe, right? Leave the quality aside, just the availability. McCullers, who the heck knows? Dana Brown should be working hard. You can find someone who's a fifth starter type to give you a few innings. I mean, the alternative is to promote Eric Lauer, a guy the Pirates released, you know, that he has a decent start or two here at Sugarland. Is that really what you're going to call up? That would smack of, if not desperation, a lack of resources and or resourcefulness.
But as it pertains to playing the best guys, we've seen that this season specifically doesn't seem to be a meritocracy all the time. I think it was on the pre-show with Dana Brown. Actually, I think it was the in-game interview, right? When they were talking with Dana Brown when he was in the booth during the broadcast, they asked him about Lo Perfido because they brought up Lo Perfido when Tucker went down. And he said, yeah, Lo Perfido needs to play. He's a young guy. He needs to get at-bats. He hasn't sniffed an at-bat. And he went a week the last time he was up without sniffing an at-bat. So I'm not necessarily saying that I know Joey Loperfido is a better option at first base or in lieu of some of the guys who are struggling. And it was nice to see Chaz over the past couple of games make some better contact with balls. So maybe there's a sign that he's coming out of it. But you got a guy like Joey Loperfido, who was hitting .333 last time he was up at the big club. Pedro Leon's tearing the cover off the ball in AAA right now. He can't even get a call up. There do seem to be some other options that are out there, but it's hard to find out or hard to understand how the decisions are getting made by who's playing and who's making them.
In McCormick's case, I thought it was about to where he needed to be sent to Sugarland to take a few days to try to get his swing together. He's been late on everything. He's been chasing high fastballs galore. But then he had the opposite field blow for a triple on Saturday, right? Chaz's opposite field power, I thought, was his signature last season. Then a two-hit game on Sunday, so probably grants him a temporary reprieve if he was going to be in need of one. Jake Myers had sizzled for a month. He'd stunk it up for the last couple, 3 weeks, a two-hit game on Sunday. Also, the misfortune of Loperfido, who they're pigeonholing early on as no more than a platoon guy. They faced this left-handed starter against the Angels Saturday, another Sunday. Monday night against the Giants, it's another left-handed starter. If Loperfido's not in the lineup Tuesday against Jordan Hicks, Wednesday against Logan Webb, a couple of right-handers, not Lucy, Joe Espada would have some splaining to do. They need Loperfido in there against all right-handed pitching, and that includes some at first base. You know, if you're an Astros fan, you want the Astros to do well, but I would think it's actually mildly frustrating that Jose Abreu is doing just enough, you know, a home run in a garbage time situation. He did actually manage to pull a ball Sunday in fair territory for a double down the line, but he's 7 for 35. That's 200 since his return, but he's popped a couple of home runs and a double. So they're probably going to continue to play him. I mean, he's had a couple starts against right-handed pitching as John Singleton is downward sloped and is now in baseball witness protection. To me, Loperfido would still be my primary first baseman. See if he gives you a baseball B12 shot. And you know, Leon knocking on the door. If Chaz had taken one more offer, I'd have thought, you know, that we're not just burying you, Chaz, but hey, you know, go clear your head, try to get your swing together and give Leon a little taste. But I don't see that happening.
No, I'd love to see Loperfido get regular at bats at first base. We know what this is. They're just going to keep running Abreu out there. They did it with Maldonado last year. It's not going to change. And they're paying Abreu way more than they were paying Maldonado. So I think we just kind of have to grin and bear it with him.
Be in their best interest. I think they're loath to accept it, but it would be in their best interest for Abreu to break out about a 2 for 26 where they could say, okay, it's time. Here's all your money. Thanks for the memories.
I wish I were as confident as you that a 2 for 26 would get the job done, but I feel like it's almost a vampire situation where it's just, what do you have to do to put the corpse of Jose Abreu down? And I hate to talk about Jose Abreu. Dude's had an amazing career, MVP. I don't want to speak disparagingly of a guy who's had a good career, but
it's
just
business, Brandon. Yes, it's business. It's not personal.
It is a performance-based industry. It's a performance-based league. You have to perform. He's not performing. And as I alluded to earlier, the decision-making has been questionable at times. We got a little bit of some different perspective as far as how the decision-making internally is happening. So, gents, I wanted to talk to you about this because Keith Law was on our sister platform, ESPN 97.5. Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham asked him about the national perspective of how the Astros front office is operating. As we've talked about here, and as fans and media have kind of been murmuring about, it seems like locally the opinion is Crane, Bagwell, Reggie Jackson are pulling the strings behind the scenes, with Dana Brown acting as a spokesperson for the team's moves. Keith Law confirmed that view is shared by the national media as well. And you can go check out that interview on sportsmap.com right now. Like I said, this isn't news if you've been listening to this podcast, because that's something that we have speculated and questioned the internal power structure for quite some time. But admittedly, those of us who follow the team on a daily basis from game to game can certainly be victims of being in a bubble. Charlie, does Keith Law confirming this is not just a locally held belief, does this provide some sort of sanity check for fans and media that they aren't crazy? And maybe a better question is it really that big of a deal? Is it only a big deal because of the performance on the field right now?
Oh, that certainly magnifies it. Keith Law of The Athletic, generally their prospects guy, but used to work for the Blue Jays, so he has contacts across Major League Baseball. You know, when Dana Brown was hired, his background was in scouting and player development, and the Astros farm system is in poor shape now, but it was in a worse state of withered status when Dana Brown got the job for a number of reasons, some mistakes, picking late in rounds year after year because of the Astros success, the no first and second round picks for 2 years because of the cheating punishment. And so Dana Brown's been on the job for one draft, right? The second one is near at hand, but you can't just rejuvenate a farm system overnight. So Dana Brown, the biggest part of his job, I think, for which he was hired, that's over a 2-3-4 year period. And then we'll see what Dana Brown has done with the Astros farm system. But he was not hired as the director of scouting or the player personnel director. He was hired, at least nominally, as the general manager. So was he hired already a little bit neutered in that area? Or, you know, you'll handle the sort of B-list stuff, trading for that extra reliever or spare part player. But my kitchen cabinet, meaning Jim Crane, I'm real buds now with Baggy and Reggie, and so we're out on a golf course somewhere. That's where we'll really noodle out the bigger stuff and the bigger contracts, and we're going to give Montero 3 years, and we're going to go a third year on Jose Abreu. It would be a real interesting entry in Dana Brown's diary to get to read if he was to vent on this stuff, if he has stuff to vent about. You know, was he hired? And you know, I don't want to say a big bait and switch operation. He's getting a general manager's salary. There are only 30 such gigs. He got a nice bump, I'm sure, from what he was making with the Braves. But is he in the role that he fully felt he was hired to fulfill? Can't know, but many, many wonder.
For me, this is kind of what we feared when Ausmus's name was being thrown around as possibly being the general manager. We feared this type of thing to where it'd really be Jeff Bagwell and these guys behind the scenes calling all the shots, and Ausmus would just kind of do their bidding. Well, it looks like it kind of happened anyway with Dana Brown as we speculate on the outside looking in. I don't know if it made that big a difference. I think at least Dana Brown is, it seems like maybe he's one extra voice in the room, maybe of kind of sanity, of just a pure baseball guy just giving his opinion, somebody that's not, doesn't have any connection to Bagwell or anything like that. But he is, I think, just that, just a voice in the room, not what you would expect with the general manager, where you think what they think would carry more weight than somebody that's just an advisor. But, you know, we've been talking about this for a long time. This, it looks like that's what it is. It's Bagwell and Crane, and they talk about their baseball men. And I think this national opinion of the Astros goes back to when they parted ways with James Click. You know, who gets rid of their general manager after winning the World Series? So it goes all the way back to that. And I still think that was a huge mistake. And it's one of the reasons they are where they are right now this season with a losing record, in my opinion.
And you do have to wonder, how much power does anyone really have? How much micromanaging is happening behind the scenes? I can tell you that it does make me rethink a little bit of the Dusty Baker situation, because now I don't know what kind of pressures he was under. I know we had Bob Nightingale run that article that was basically saying that the analytics guys ran Dusty Baker off, which I think is complete nonsense, because there's no analytical person in charge that is making decisions for this team, because they are making decisions that go against the numbers right now. But I would buy an internal power structure that could run off a manager. In fact, we speculated in the last episode whether or not Astros would go through another manager just for the sake of someone having to fall on the sword for the results of this season. And I think part of the frustration from the fan base and the media's feeling is really from a feeling of being gaslit. Let me just give you a prime example of that. Was Tuesday Chandler Rome breaking the news that Christian Javier was scheduled for Tommy John surgery. And prior to that, our update from Dana Brown had been Urquidy and Javier were feeling better. And then all of a sudden it got to this real dark update of Joe Espada's update was he was giving them space and they were seeking second opinions. Chandler Rome comes in on Tuesday, breaks the news that at least Javier was having surgery. MLB.com picked up the story first and through their website on their RSS feed, the Astros.com actually pulled in a story that credited sources that Urquidy and Javier were getting surgery before the Astros would even confirm, which they would finally do on Wednesday, at least acknowledging that they were getting elbow surgery, but not confirming that it was Tommy John surgery. So in a time in which it feels like the goodwill is just continuing to be burned with fans right now, do you think continuing with this high level of secrecy when really there doesn't seem to be anything to gain from it, do you think this is just a interesting decision to say the least?
Well, it said winning is the best deodorant. So losing is like a skunk cabbage rub. Maybe the Astros are just charmingly, naively optimistic when it comes to injuries. Right? It took them 3 days to realize Kyle Tucker's walking on crutches. Maybe he's not going to be able to play tonight. So they retroactively put him on the IL. He'll be out until at least this coming weekend. Or maybe he'll be out till mid-August. Who knows? We're talking about the Astros here. So I've said before, I just find it annoying, the obfuscation, the duck and dodge. There's no competitive benefit whatsoever derived from trying to think teams, oh no, we're scared. Maybe Javier is going to come back because he doesn't need Tommy John surgery. So I just find it silliness, but it's nothing new with the Astros MO, but all they've done is win, 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 win. So when the light shines a little bit differently, when you're at 30 and 36, where they are starting this week, there's going to be less tolerance or more annoyance at anything that goes wrong or doesn't seem on the up and up.
I just find it odd when they pick and choose on, what the deal is. Like, we find out that night that Kyle Tucker had x-rays and they were negative. They let us know that. In the finale of the Angels series, Bregman got hit on the hand again. After the game, Chandler Rome was tweeting out that the first one he took actually hit him on the hand. The one that happened in the finale actually hit him on the wrist. So not in the exact same spot. So it looks like he's going to be okay. So it's funny when sometimes they'll let you know stuff right away. And then, right, with the Urquidy and Javier stuff, you're just sitting there going, what is going on? What is taking so long? So it's just so inconsistent. I don't know with these guys.
And I'm a WWE fan, so I love a good swerve, but I don't think we're going to be late in the season and Christian Javier's theme music comes and he comes running to the mound with a folded steel chair in his hand to do whatever with it. I don't understand the need to continue to have this Pentagon level of secrecy when it comes to injuries. It makes you think the worst. Anytime there's any sort of ambiguity, you can't help but think, well, there's no telling. It could be a week or it could be season ending. I'll give you guys the last word.
Yeah, a little Pravda-ish at times. Everything is good. Everything is good. We have nothing but good news for you. Hey, the more pressing matter is the Astros start the week 6.5 back of the Mariners. Seattle is 4 with the White Sox. So it'll be a big surprise if they do anything less than hang 3 more wins among those 4 games on the wall. Astros need to win a series in San Francisco. Blowing that game Sunday, a 3-3 road trip does not cut it. It's not a miserable trip on its own face value or of its own face value, but where the Astros are in the standings, when you're playing 2 losing teams, you can't be going 500 when you're trying to roar from behind. So, if they take 2 out of 3 in San Francisco, it's a 4 out of 6 road trip. Okay, then come home and see what you do with the Tigers.
Yeah, they got to get back to 500 and get this thing competitive before the All-Star break. Dana Brown's right. We're going to be buyers, not sellers. This is the time to get above 500, start playing good baseball, and we'll see what happens. We'll see if they add some more talent to the roster or if they're just not that good and they do end up being sellers. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they're going to get back to 500. I just don't know if that they're going to backslide again. I just don't know if this is that team that finally kind of gets cranking, and it just took a while. I just feel like there's something about this team. Even when they pile up a few wins, that they're going to give away a few. I think they really are around a 500 team.
And looking back on last season, they only win the division with Seattle and Arlington cooperating. However, Texas and Seattle were cooperating this week. So really unfortunate that they weren't able to close the deal on Sunday, but such is baseball. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Shows. If you listen on podcast and you enjoy the show, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating. Charlie, Josh, and I will catch you next week, but you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports fix. All you have to do is subscribe to Sports Map Houston and Sports Map Texans on YouTube, and we'll have some more content for you during the week. And until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line. Because Stone Cold said so.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelance profiles, get help drafting a job post, or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them to take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com today and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.